Fantastic. Hello all and happy Friday. Coming to you from WHPC 90.3 FM, it is the Friday edition of American Hit Radio. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with you every Wednesday and Friday at this time at 5 p.m. With me, of course, Heidi Morales Ryan, my beautiful wife, here to help me out. And together we hope to see if we can do a little bit of discussion on our topic, as has been the case for...
Well, I'm mostly here for moral support.
You're good. You're a homegirl with Lewis. You both go back to New Orleans. That helps. It helps justify everything, all my work. This is actually our sixth show dedicated to Lewis Armstrong. And I knew I was going to spend a lot of time on Lewis because there's a lot that I wanted to cover. What I didn't know is that I would be on show number six and I'd still be in the 20s. Yeah, we're covering the years 1927 to 1928. And I think if you're following the show, you probably have to agree with me that I'm really not dallying or wasting time or playing extraneous tracks. We really are playing stuff that
it's
really
important.
Yeah, it needs to be covered. This is stuff that absolutely has to be addressed if you have any interest at all in the music of Lewis Armstrong. And this show, probably more than any other, should have less talk and more music because this is what I would consider...
Thank goodness.
Right? Well said. This is Lewis at his most prolific and probably at the absolute peak of his creativity. He's not quite 30 years old yet. He's at the top of his game and his talent. He's still wildly adventurous and capable of doing anything that he sets his mind to. So it really is a time when one song after another is just endless genius. And it's probably fair to say that at this point in time, he probably is the most talented musician on the planet Earth. And that's why I want to play more music than anything. Unfortunately, things weren't as wonderful for him as all of that, though, to be honest. In his personal life, although he was, you know, totally at the top of his game and his talent, he should have been on top of the world. But he's got a failing marriage, which is really breaking him up because he obviously...
To Lil, right?
Right. His marriage to Lil. She's his band member, and she's doing so much to help his career, but they're just not getting it together. He has a girl on the side, Alpha. She's got other things going on apparently as well, but, you know, they never really are able to work it out or pull themselves together, even though they continue their musical relationship. To make it even worse, Lewis finds out that his mother is suffering from hardening of the arteries, and she is now literally dying. Mm. So he does ask Lil to go to New Orleans to get her and bring her back home, where Lewis pretty much brings her to watch her die. And he says that, you know, he never really cried in his life, but, you know, watching his mother die, he goes, that was it. In his own words, the undertaker took her body to the chapel, and the moment that really touched me was when the sermon was finished and the undertaker began to cover up her coffin. I let out plenty of tears, and I just couldn't stop crying. Mm. And you can understand, here's this man that pretty much was always looking at the bright side, got so much of his attitude about life from his mother. Will help us to segue into this track, which was recorded close to that time, recorded with the Hot Sevens. Here's Lewis Armstrong with Melancholy. Thank you. Louis Armstrong and the Hot Seven, a song called Melancholy, dating from 1927. Now, that side of his personal life is going bad, and there's a few other things that are actually beginning to happen with Louis around this time. He had the gig at the Vendome. That ran out at the movie theater. Next thing that happened was his engagement at the Sunset had ended, and his other gig that he had, playing with the Clarence Jones Orchestra, that ended up drying up too.
Wow.
So here he is, the most talented musician in the world, used to working virtually 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. And all of a sudden, by the end of 1927, he finds himself out of work.
Why wasn't he having people lining up to hire him?
He should, but he was in Chicago for a long time at this point. And of course, you'd imagine that they have to basically turn over different artists.
Uh-huh.
So Louis is finding work in different parts of town, but he just found himself in this dry spot at this one time. He was still recording, and he's still recording with Lil. But the next track that he recorded kind of like sums up what was happening to him, or what he was beginning to sense was happening in his life. And he's got a sense of humor about it, but it's a track that he called SOL Blues. I don't have to tell you what that stands for, I guess. You know, but that's what exactly he was talking about, because he was blank out of luck as far as he was concerned. Now, what makes this interesting, actually, is because of the title, the song didn't get released for something like maybe 15 years.
My goodness.
It was just, they thought it was a little, just the
too
letters.
Risque.
The letters, S-O-L, were considered risque. So it eventually got released under a different title. And I want to play a little bit of S-O-L Blues before we play the other track, because what you're going to hear is the same band doing the same arrangement, and you get this idea of how Louis works, that he's pretty much, so much of this is actually him being inspired almost off the cuff. And you get the sense that SOL Blues was really him ad-libbing his way through the song, because
mm-hmm.
that was one take, and then just, you know, a day later, he goes back into the studio, says, let's record that again, and he has totally different words. So we're going to hear how he begins it, as it's called SOL Blues, the rare version, or what was the rare version at the time. And then we'll follow that with a complete version of what is essentially the same song and arrangement, only this time it's called Gully Low Blues. First, here's SOL Blues. There you have the vocal portion of the SOL Blues as performed by Louis. Now, what's interesting about this, just before we play the other version, is actually what this derives from. Apparently, in his New Orleans days, this type of a blues was what they would use for cutting each other.
Oh.
A lot of times, the band members, which is to say one guy would try to outplay another.
Mm-hmm.
And in New Orleans, they had another name for the title. What they called it was, if you don't like the way I play, you can kiss my F&A.
Nice.
Isn't that something? So Louis was actually softening it up by calling it the SOL Blues. He realized he had to go a step further, though. So here it is again in completion. This time it's called the Gully Low Blues.
Thank you. Mama, why do you treat me so? Mama, why do you treat me so? I know why you treat me so bad. You treat me mean, baby, just because I'm darling low. Now, Mama, if you listen, baby, I'll tell you something you don't know. You don't know. If you just listen to me, honey, I'll tell you something you don't know. If you just give me a break and take me back, I won't be calling no more. Calling no more.
I hope that was educational for you.
Was that like a false rock and roll ending?
Right. And it's really, even though the drums are part of the band now, Baby Dodds is his drummer, it's still as difficult to record the drums. So really all that he's allowed to do is that little cymbal flourish every now and then because the drums are just too loud to record.
Right.
Couldn't really do it right. But there you hear how Lewis was thinking and how he was working in the studio. Same song, basically, totally different words, different themes, really.
They should have just put Baby Dodds in another room.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know why, I guess, yeah, that, you know how hard that is too, but it's pretty much what they had to do to record at the time. Now, as I mentioned, his Armstrong to Lil was really not doing well around this time. And that being the case, that is what makes this next recording all the more amazing that it even exists. This was recorded the exact same day as the track we just heard, Gully Low Blues. The name of this track is That's When I'll Come Back to You. And here's Lewis with Lil on piano in the studio. And they're pretty much, you know, singing about breaking up. And
uh-oh,
it's stunning, really. Considering the state of their marriage, these are some incredible lyrics.
Thank you. going to fight. If you'll only come back to me, I'll work hard every day and give you all my pay. If you'll only try to agree, you can knock me down, treat me rough, and even kick me. Black both my eyes, but Daddy, please don't quit me. I'll scrub, wash, and even my son. If you'll only come back to me.
Now, Mama, when the rain turns to snow and it's 90 below, that's when I'll come back to you. When I have nothing to eat, no shoes for my little feet, then I will think that you've been through, which I know that's a lot. You may have somebody else, I'll agree, but baby, you lost a gold mine when you lost me. Now when your hair drags the ground and bucks are flying around, then I'll come back to you, baby. Yes, dearie, Papa, then he'll bout face and come back to you.
You can almost hear, you can very easily hear the playfulness in both of their voices as they're singing that song.
I know, it's amazing, right?
You know, later on in his life also, for what it's worth, although the divorce was imminent and it was going to happen, there was never really bad blood apparently between the two of them, not much animosity. Lewis, when he talks about Lil much later in his life in the 60s and the 70s, he talks fondly of her. He's always mentioned that he thought that she had his best interests in mind.
Mm-hmm.
That they might not have been able to pull it together, but they at least still cared for each other as people, which is nice to know. Now, with Lewis being down on his luck, like I said, not really getting work as much as he wanted to, he figured we should at least get into the studio and record as much as possible. So by the end of 1927, he puts together the original Hot Five again. He gets the exact same guys together, which is, of course, himself and Lil, still on piano, Kid Ory from New Orleans on trombone, Johnny Dodds from New Orleans on clarinet, and Johnny Sancier, his other New Orleans compatriot, playing banjo and guitar. They get together to record a few more tracks, and what's interesting is some of the songs that they actually record are written by Lil, and it really does prove, although we might talk about Lil's piano playing as sometimes feeling like it's a bit wooden or stiff,
mm-hmm. We
only say that because we're comparing it really to people like Earl Hines,
right?
You know, and some of the other geniuses that Lewis worked with. But if we're really going to give Lil her fair due, you got to recognize the fact that she's the songwriter behind a lot of this material, including this next track, which is, I think, obviously proves just how much of a talented songwriter she really is. Recorded in late 1927, in December 9th, to be exact. Here's Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five with Struttin' with Some Barbecue.
Thank you.
genius all around there. Everybody's solo is brilliant. The phrasing is brilliant. And again, like I said, you know, got to give Lil her due. When you can write a song which has got that much emotion and, well, motion to it, and well-constructed song. What is amazing, I keep saying, you know, like I said, as you can tell, there's a little more music than talk for me this time because there's so much stuff that I want to get in of Lewis's. Just a couple days later, they go back into the studio on December 13th, 1927. Keep in mind, folks, this is 82 years ago. 82
Almost
years.
Almost to the day.
Yeah, exactly,
with
really.
That previous song.
Very much so. And so keeping that, I mean, to have music that can still sound fresh and vital after all this time, there's nothing else that compares to it. There's just really nothing else you can point at that can sound that way. You can maybe get a little bit of that from some Bessie Smith tracks, but it's not the same as this, where you've got so many different aspects of the song that are making it sound so great and vital, whether it's the songwriting. Of course, Lewis is playing, Lewis is singing. And this next track is about, this is where, like, another great example of Lewis at the peak of his art at this age, when he's about 28, 29 years old. His playing is even more sonorous. And he scats on this next track, but there's a lyricism to his scatting even that begins to approach his trumpet playing. You're beginning to realize that he starts thinking, I can do with my voice the same thing I do with my horn. And what a thought. Nobody was thinking like this. Singers all over the world at this point are pretty much like looking to Louis Armstrong to get their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Dead serious. You know, little youngsters like Billie Holiday, Bing Crosby, this is where they're getting their ideas. Here in tracks like this. Again, it's the Hot Five featuring Louis Armstrong. Another track written by Lil. This one's called Hotter Than That.
Thank you.
contest. You might notice that there was a new instrument on that track, actually.
A little guitar, right?
Yeah. I'm glad, you know, you're listening right. That was a man named Lonnie Johnson, one of the foremost developers of playing the guitar, on recording of the guitar, and doing quite a good job. And he's inspiring Lewis on that, too. It's very interesting. If you were listening close enough, you'd hear Lewis while he's scatting, kind of doing like an interesting imitation of the guitar while the guitar is playing, and each instrument kind of like stepping up the game. And you get to the point where you start listening to this and you're like, what is this? What can this man not do? You know, Lewis is doing every single thing that he puts his mind to. And it's even the people around him and the people who are hearing it know it. And yet,
well, that's
keep
what I was going to say, that you were, and not to diminish Lil Hardin's talent, but, maybe her songwriting, really, what credit goes to what good musicians she's working with. I mean, their solos
inspiring,
and things were really what shine in those songs. They fit in to what, you know, she made a template, a cut out a frame, and they filled in the picture.
I couldn't put it better. That's exactly what her song is this template. And if the playing was ordinary, none of us would remember those songs.
Right.
But because the playing is so good, and thank goodness the template that she has is so wonderful that it really helps to give these songs life. Because great solos on plebeian material wouldn't be as fun to listen to either. So it's great that it does work out. But things weren't working out for Lewis as our story unfolds. I had already mentioned, of course, that he had met Earl Hines and they were working together a little bit in public in some of these theater gigs, but they had all gone belly up and they're all kind of out of work right now. And, you know, Lewis said they were lucky if they had 15 cents to rub together at some times. They couldn't believe how down on their luck they were. Lewis commented that Earl Hines always had a fat cigar in his mouth, no matter what. And they said they kind of respected him for that. But Lewis and Earl and their drummer, Zuddy Singleton, were sort of like the three musketeers, the three of them together pretty much, doing all their work together. And they end up trying to figure, what can we do to make some money? We got to get, so let's make our own money. Instead of like
counterfeiting
with everybody, kind of, oh my, well, I shouldn't say that.
No, I'm kidding.
What does happen is like saying, well, if we're not being able to get the gigs here in town that we really want, why don't we maybe open up our own club? Like, that might be a good idea. Hey. I mean, the only club in town at this point that was really doing great was this new thing that opened up called the Savoy with a big flashy billboard and lights up, and everybody was going there. So they decided that they would actually open up a club down the street from the Savoy, call it the Warwick, and the three of them would start their own nightclub. But they didn't have the money. Lewis had a little bit of money. So they went in as partners, but they used Lewis's money.
Yeah.
Lewis had to guarantee 1 year's lease, and the rent was, at the time, was fairly outrageous, like $375 a month, which is probably like, I don't know, compared to today, that could be like maybe $8,000 a month.
Wow.
So Lewis is guaranteeing all of this. Opening night, here are three of the most ingenious musicians alive in their age, trying to basically attract a crowd, but they're right down the block from the Savoy, and they're playing, and nobody's coming. And they're doing this night after that. They're playing till they're blue in the face, and they can't get the people away from the hip thing that's happening. It's not that much different than today, you know, the thing with the advertisement and the thing that's going to drag the people in, and that's where the hot people are going, so people want to go there. All of a sudden, Lewis is beginning to question his own relevance. It became very worrisome for him. It was really a matter of time. After really only a few nights, they realized that it wasn't going to work, and they decided to pull the plug and back out. So now Lewis, here we are, the world's best musician, is broke and in debt.
Youch.
At the peak of his talents at this time in 1928, literally behind the eight ball, so to speak, as far as, you know, not having any cash. He does that also, by the way, that last track we heard was the last recording of the classic Hot Five. Lewis realizes he's really got to do something. So he's not going to get the original Hot Five together again. And he's hanging out with Earl. His marriage is a bit of a wreck. Let's put another band together. We'll record it. We'll sell it on my name. We'll call it the Hot Five. Different musicians, though. It'll be us three, and we'll fatten it out. So Lewis, Zuddy Singleton, and Earl Hines actually get together with Mancy Carr on banjo, Jimmy Strong, this clarinet player who they knew, and Fred Robinson on trombone. Six of them, but they still called themselves. Didn't matter. They were still calling themselves the Hot Five. And they got together to record a bunch of songs which now turns out to be, this is easily the artistic peak of Lewis's career is going to be coming in these next few days as he is recording these songs with what are basically geniuses compiled in one room. We're going to start off with one track from their session from June 1927. This is called Skip the Gutter. That song tells you so much about the characters involved in making it. First of all, you hear the genius of the duel, really, that's going on between Lewis on trumpet and Earl Hines on piano. It's so ingenious. You hear him like skipping ahead in double time and then pulling back to even time without missing a single beat, and Lewis running circles around him and they're answering each other. It's enough to make you feel sorry for the other guys in the band. listen to the clarinet player and it's like, wow. He can't do anything but maybe play his riff because he's surrounded by such insane genius. And then the trombonist comes in, and it's flat out ordinary because this phenomenal thing is happening around them. And then they kick it up a notch. This is the exact same day, the very next recording. Now they basically figure, okay, let's have some fun with this. Now, Lewis Armstrong and Earl Hines were definitely very good friends who had a huge amount of respect for each other, but there was also a little bit of a competitiveness between them. And I think you can almost hear it in the tone of voice on this next track. They work out a skit to more or less open up the song where they stop and they basically talk. Now, don't forget, this is Prohibition. So Lewis basically makes a reference to Earl Hines about how, like, you know, what's the matter? Yeah, I bet you'd have more fun if you had some of, I think it says Mrs. Search's gin or something like that, which is one of the homebrew brands of gin that they'd be able to get in the nightclub. So they kid around about this whole Prohibition joke. And then the two of them, again go into this phenomenal duel together with Lewis singing like a dream, like nobody else ever has before. From the same session, recorded on June 27th, 1928, Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five, who, as I said, really were six, with Earl Hines. The track is called A Monday Date.
Say, Earl Hines, why don't you let us in on some of that good music, Pops?
Well, come on, yeah, let's get together then.
Well, all right, tune up, boys. Is that all right?
That sounds pretty good.
Yes, that sounds pretty good. I bet if you had a half a pint of Miss Circe's gin, you wouldn't say that sounds pretty good. Well, anyhow, we're going to play anyway. Say, come on, Zooty, whip them cymbals, Pops. Monday day that you promised me last Tuesday. I have found a cozy place, so please phone me at noonday. But remember September, when the preacher says we'll build a coup forever and never. Have to make a Monday day for any date we'll.
Unbelievable, huh?
That was good.
Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five with a track called Monday Date. And I should mention that this is something that I could have, talking about how down on his luck he was at this time with all this phenomenal music going on. The day that they decided to close down their business venture,
yeah.
The day that they decided this that would happen, they leave the club, they lock it up, they go outside, and Louis's car is stolen.
Oh, no.
This is a nice car. Now it doesn't even have a car. They find the car the next day, but it was stripped of all of its parts.
Mm.
And so Lewis doesn't know what to do. Luckily, the guy who owned the garage who was going to fix the car loaned him one. It took Lewis 6 months to be able to get up the money to be able to buy his car back from the guy. This is just how bad things were for Lewis
wow.
at this time.
When it rains, it pours.
And yet, in the middle of all of this insanity that's going on around him, he manages to pull together his talent to record this next track. I would have to say is, I mean, it sounds like exaggeration, but if I could avoid equivocation, if I had to pick one song, then this next track is perhaps the most important recording in all of Western civilization. There's not a single track that I can think of that is more important, more gorgeously constructed, and more influential than this song. talking about it can almost ruin it, so I don't want to say too much except to give you a couple things to listen for and also maybe mention like where the inspiration came from. First of all, it's written by Papa Joe Oliver, who was Louis Armstrong's hero. So he obviously had it deep in his heart, a love for this song and a familiarity with it from having known it for maybe as long as maybe 10 years at this point, that he was working with it and living with it and formulating it in his head. With all of that happening, he manages to put on tape the opening cadenza that he does. First of all, in Western civilization, in music, we have a 12-tone system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play in any key, you generally stick to about, you know, 7 or 8 notes within any key. You can bend and slur a little bit. Lewis hits all 12 notes in this opening cadenza. And it's so drop-dead unbelievable that for the next 30 years, it would just make trumpet players want to quit. Because it's that unbelievable, the way he opens up the song. It just makes everybody just, your jaw ought to drop when you hear it. Besides that, there's the absolute plaintive beauty of the way that he sings along with the clarinet. Earl Hines' piano break, which just allows the whole song to breathe and has a pulse that at the same time that just gives you a sense of infinity almost. And then the way that Lewis brings it all back is so beautiful that it makes you want to like laugh out loud and cry at the exact same time. I don't know what else to say except here's Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five with West End Blues. It's almost impossible to not overanalyze it, but to just let it be what it is and just appreciate it just for just being this just truly beautiful emotive piece of music is enough. But I can't help but mention, like, for example, another aspect of that thing that amazes me every time I hear it, and I can't duplicate it in my brain, and I'm a drummer, is at the end when Lewis is, first he holds that really long note, and he just lets the volume of it begin to swell a little bit, showing all the patience in the world. Then he comes out of it, and instead of just, anybody else would probably play 16th notes on time. That'd be the normal way to do it. Lewis takes it and he plays with the time and the placement of the notes in a way that makes you, you'll hear that song 1,000 times and you'll still be guessing at where he's going to go. It's that incredible. After 82 years, hasn't aged a day, just never gets tired. And that's why I would vote for that as I would say the leading contender for what Western civilization has offered to the music world in general. It's just that amazing. Luckily, Lewis was working a little bit at this point. He did decide to get somewhere. He got together with Carol Dickerson, the guy who he actually replaced earlier, who got fired for drunkenness. Now, he at least had a gig down at the Savoy. So since they were at the Savoy, Lewis said, we may as well go play at the place that put
Can't
us out of business.
Can't beat him, better go join him.
Right. So the entire Hot Six join up with Carol Dickerson, and they go to work. So this is Zutty Singleton, Nancy Carr, Earl Hines, Jimmy Strong, Fred Robinson, and Louis Armstrong, all working with Carol Dickerson's Voyagers, and they went into the studio. So we get to hear a little bit about what the working band was like, a bigger band, because it's also fattened out with about 5 or 6 other members as well. It might have been 12 people in this band. So here is Carol Dickerson's Savoyagers, as they're called. I'm sorry, if you can forgive my bad there. Actually, I just queued up the wrong track a little bit there. That was another Lil Hardin composition, by the way. That was a song called Two Deuces, and that was Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five. Just hear a bit of that track, recorded around the same time as West End Blues. The track I wanted to play, though, I'm sorry, is this track. Here's the big band. This is Carol Dickerson's Savoyagers with a track called Symphonic Raps. Thank you. obviously, I would think that you could hear the orchestration there. It sounds a little bit more like what would be an orchestra.
Yeah, it's much fuller sounding.
But once Lewis takes that solo, everything changes, you can tell. Although I'm sure he was glad to be working again and making some money and getting the recognition, because that's exactly what's happening now. Things are beginning to get back
on track. He doesn't know how to lay back, though. I mean,
no, definitely not. Definitely
not. He's like, wants to be in the front.
And we will be back, of course, next week, next Friday, with a continuation of our coverage of Louis Armstrong, with a little bit more genius between him and Earl Hines with their time in Chicago. And I believe next week we'll also be able to cover Louis's triumphant return to New York City. A very important time in his life. So I hope you can join us again next Friday at 5 p.m. when we continue with part 7 of our coverage of Louis Armstrong. I should also mention very quickly that if you're enjoying the series and if you want to catch up on some missed episodes, we have them all posted on our website. You can go there anytime you like and play them on demand, or download them and take them with you and play them anytime you want to. The site is Shad Up and Listen, shaddupandlisten.com. Check it out. The site, all of our shows are there in chronological order. This entire How Music Changed series, not just Louis Armstrong, but everything. So you can find literally 300 or 400 shows there, but the Louis Armstrong shows are the closest to the front. So anyway, we will leave you with this one track. Again, this is actually credited to Louis Armstrong and his orchestra, as the Savoy crowd would eventually come to be called. It's really the same six guys, though, as was Louis Armstrong and his Hot Five, performing their version of Basin Street Blues. Take care, everybody. Heidi, thank you so much. It was great. And Earl, thanks for putting up with me with great engineering again, and look forward to seeing you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Da 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 da